Welcome to the Deep Dive, where we sift through the noise, cut to the chase, and give you the truly important nuggets of knowledge from the sources you share with us. Today, we're plunging into a fascinating company that stands at the very intersection of two colossal global shifts: the ongoing exodus from traditional tobacco and the unstoppable, relentless ascent of e-commerce. We're focusing our lens on Happyp Group AB, listed as HAYPPST, a specialist in the burgeoning smokeless nicotine market. Our collection of articles, research reports, and company statements paints a vivid picture of a rapidly growing e-commerce player, one that's strategically positioned to capitalize on these trends but simultaneously grappling with some truly monumental challenges.
That's absolutely right. This deep dive isn't merely about a single company's financials or operations. It's a journey into understanding the intricate dynamics of evolving consumer health trends, the ever-changing landscape of digital retail, and a notoriously scrutinized, complex regulatory environment. We'll meticulously unpack Hape's unique business model, its impressive financial trajectory, and critically, the significant risks inherent in operating within such a high-stakes dynamic space.
Our mission today is to thoroughly dissect this Swedish-rooted company. We want to reveal the profound why behind its rapid expansion and explore the crucial what next that will shape its future. By the time we conclude this deep dive, you, our listener, will be exceptionally well-informed about the global paradigm shift in oral nicotine consumption and Happyp Group's pivotal role within it. So let's unearth the layers and get started. Let's lay the groundwork here. Who exactly is Happyp Group and what's the essence of their business? What do they do?
Right. So at its core, Happyp Group AB, headquartered in Stockholm, Sweden, is a pure-play e-commerce specialist. Their stated mission, which they emphasize in other communications, is to inspire healthier enjoyment for millions. Now, this isn't just marketing fluff, it's central to their business. They aim to achieve this by providing accessible, appealing, and importantly, less harmful alternatives to combustible cigarettes. This positions them squarely at the forefront of what's known as the Reduced Risk Product, or RRP, movement. Their entire business model is built around facilitating this public health shift, you know, moving adult nicotine users away from the most dangerous form of consumption.
So if I'm understanding correctly, they're not actually manufacturing these nicotine products themselves. They're primarily focused on selling them online, acting as a digital storefront. Is that it?
Precisely. You've hit on a critical distinction. They are an e-commerce aggregator. This means they curate and sell products made by others. Their entire focus is exclusively on smokeless nicotine products, predominantly modern nicotine pouches, NPs, and the more traditional Swedish snus. Think of them as the Amazon, or perhaps more accurately, the specialized Sephora for oral nicotine products. They offer an incredibly vast selection, far beyond what you'd ever find in a typical convenience store. This extensive choice is a fundamental pillar of their value proposition to consumers.
You mentioned two massive secular trends that are really propelling Hape's business forward. Could you elaborate on those and explain why they're such powerful forces?
Absolutely. Happyp Group has, I think, masterfully positioned itself at the confluence of two incredibly powerful long-term macroeconomic and social shifts. The first is the consumer shift to reduced risk products, RRPs. This isn't a fad, it's a deep-seated public health movement. People are more health conscious than ever before, actively seeking safer alternatives to smoking due to widespread awareness of its severe health consequences. Oral nicotine products fit this need perfectly because they deliver nicotine without the harmful combustion process of cigarettes. It's a fundamental change in how people approach nicotine consumption.
Okay, that makes sense. And the second one?
The second trend is the retail migration to online channels. This is a structural shift that has been accelerating for decades across virtually all industries, moving from traditional brick-and-mortar stores to the undeniable convenience and reach of e-commerce. What's crucial for Happyp is that oral nicotine products are particularly well-suited for online sales. They're small, lightweight, non-perishable, and are frequently purchased, making them ideal for efficient direct-to-consumer delivery. So you have a demand shift meeting a supply channel shift, creating a truly powerful synergy.
That's a fascinating and potent combination. It sounds like they're not just riding some big waves, but actively steering into them. How have they built their e-commerce empire to leverage these trends? Is it just one big website?
Oh, far from it. They've actually built a sophisticated multi-brand, multi-country e-commerce ecosystem. It's not a single monolithic website, but a diverse portfolio of no fewer than 11 distinct e-commerce brands, each one meticulously tailored to the local language, cultural nuances, and specific consumer preferences of its target market.
11 brands.
Yeah, and this decentralized approach is incredibly strategic. It allows for highly targeted marketing, localized customer service, and the ability to adapt quickly to regional tastes or regulatory shifts, all while being part of a larger interconnected global network.
Can you give us a few concrete examples? I'm curious how they differentiate them.
Certainly. In their home market of Sweden, they operate snusbulleget.se, which caters to a market with a long history of snus use. For the critically important and rapidly expanding U.S. market, they run nikokick.com. Then you have snusgem.no for Norway, and heypeev.com serves customers in the U.K. and Germany.
Okay.
And the differentiation isn't just cosmetic, it's about market positioning. One brand might be optimized for price-conscious buyers, another for premium products, or another for a broad exploratory selection. This allows them to capture a wider array of consumer segments and truly embed themselves locally, even as a global entity.
So what's the core value proposition for HAB? Why do both consumers and the manufacturers, their suppliers, choose to engage with them? What makes them indispensable?
Right. They've created a genuinely virtuous cycle that benefits both sides of their marketplace. For consumers, it's fundamentally about superior selection, competitive pricing, and unparalleled convenience. Imagine walking into your local shop and seeing maybe 5 or 6 oral nicotine options.
Yeah, not much choice usually.
Exactly. HAPE Online offers an extensive and constantly updated assortment of hundreds of brands, flavors, and nicotine strengths. This is a game changer, especially in markets like the U.S., where one brand, ZYN, heavily dominates offline shelves.
Right. ZYN is everywhere.
It is. And this dominance pushes consumers online for broader choice and discovery. Add to that the sheer convenience of 247 online ordering, often with subscription services and direct-to-home delivery, and it becomes a highly compelling offer for the modern consumer.
Okay, that makes sense for the consumer side. What about the suppliers? Why do they need HAPE?
Now, for suppliers, ranging from the global tobacco giants to smaller independent manufacturers, HAPE serves as an absolutely critical and highly efficient channel to market. It provides immediate direct access to a very large and highly targeted base of over 1.1 million active consumers as of 2024 who are actively seeking smokeless nicotine products. But what's truly fascinating, and where HAPE goes beyond being just a retailer, is how this relationship is evolving. HAPE leverages its most valuable asset, its data. By analyzing purchasing patterns across millions of transactions, which brands are bought together, which flavors surge in popularity and where demographics, how pricing impacts conversion, the company provides brand owners with invaluable market intelligence.
That's where it gets really interesting, turning their operational data into a high-margin revenue stream. Can you give us a tangible example of the kind of insight they might provide to a supplier? Because that sounds like a serious competitive edge.
Okay, think of it this way. Imagine HAPE's data revealing that a highly specific niche flavor profile, let's say a spiced cranberry variant, is suddenly showing a remarkable spike in popularity among a specific demographic in, for example, a handful of mid-sized cities in Germany. And this trend is emerging long before traditional market research methods could ever detect such a granular, hyper-local surge.
Right. They see it happening in real time.
Exactly. HAPE could then approach a brand owner and say, look, we're seeing this distinct pattern. Your competitors probably aren't because they don't have this aggregate view across all brands.
Yeah.
This insight could inform your next product launch, your marketing spend, or even pinpoint specific regions for targeted campaigns. That's the kind of predictive strategic intelligence that can dramatically alter a manufacturer's product roadmap or marketing focus.
Wow.
Yeah, it makes HAPE's data not just valuable, but genuinely transformative and a very strategic asset for both parties. It creates this emerging media and insights business where suppliers actually pay HAPE up for data and promotional placements on their sites.
That's clever. Really clever. Okay, let's zoom out a bit now. We've established HAPE's model, but how big is this global oral nicotine market, and how fast is it really growing? Are we talking about steady growth or something more explosive?
Oh, this is unequivocally one of the fastest growing segments in consumer staples right now. It's experiencing what can only be described as explosive expansion. The global modern oral nicotine products market is projected by Grandview Research to expand from an already significant USD 5.5 billion in 2023 to a truly staggering USD 26.4 billion by 2030.
26 billion.
Yeah, that's a compound annual growth rate, or CAGR, of 26.2%. Some estimates for the U.S. market alone show even higher CGRs, potentially reaching 32.5% through the decade. Hape Group itself points to market estimates projecting the combined nicotine pouch and snus market to more than double from SEK 27 billion in 2020 to an impressive SEK 60 billion by 2025.
Wow, doubling in 5 years is incredible.
Yeah.
What's fueling that kind of explosion? It's not just a minor bump. It's clearly a fundamental shift in consumer behavior.
Indeed. This powerful secular growth isn't due to a single factor, but a convergence of several interconnected forces. First, and perhaps most profoundly, is harm reduction. Millions of consumers worldwide are actively seeking less harmful alternatives to combustible cigarettes, driven by growing public health awareness and a desire for healthier lifestyles. Oral nicotine products offer that crucial bridge, delivering nicotine without the dangerous toxins associated with burning tobacco. It's a foundational public health trend that is moving millions away from smoking.
Okay, harm reduction is key. What else?
Second, there's a remarkable level of product innovation and flavor variety. Unlike traditional cigarettes, which have been a relatively static category for decades, this market is incredibly dynamic. Manufacturers are constantly introducing new flavors, think popular choices like mint, fruit, or even coffee profiles, as well as novel formats and diverse nicotine strengths. Flavored products, in fact, account for about 90% of the total market.
90%. That's huge.
It is, which speaks volumes about their appeal and ability to attract new users transitioning from other forms of nicotine. Third, the products offer unmatched convenience and discretion. Nicotine pouches are smoke-free, vapor-free, and spit-free. This means they can be used discreetly in virtually any public setting where smoking or vaping is often banned, think workplaces, public transport, or social gatherings. This adaptability perfectly aligns with modern, on-the-go lifestyles.
Right, you can use them anywhere.
Pretty much. And finally, a key driver is the e-commerce channel growth itself. These products are ideally suited for online retail. They're small, lightweight, non-perishable, and are frequently purchased, making them highly efficient to ship directly to consumers. The online distribution channel for oral nicotine is projected to grow at a CGR of approximately 28%, actually outpacing the growth of the overall market.
So online is growing even faster than the market overall.
That's right. Consumers are increasingly embracing the vast selection, competitive pricing, and sheer convenience that online retailers like Hape provide.
So it's a perfect storm, really. A confluence of health consciousness, relentless product innovation, modern lifestyle compatibility, and the undeniable pull of digital retail. That certainly makes for a compelling growth story. Okay, this is where things often get really complicated. And for a company like Hape, potentially perilous regulation. How do things look for oral nicotine products across the European landscape?
Yes, regulation. Europe is, without a doubt, a regulatory patchwork, and it's a constant source of uncertainty for the industry. The EU's Tobacco Products Directive, or TTD, famously bans snus in most member states, with Sweden being a decades-old exception due to its deep cultural history with the product. Modern nicotine pouches, however, are tobacco leaf-free. This means they currently fall into a kind of legal loophole. They aren't explicitly covered by the TPD, leaving their regulation largely up to individual member states.
A legal gray area, you say?
Yeah.
What are the practical implications of that kind of uncertainty for a company like Hape, which operates across multiple European countries?
It's genuinely a double-edged sword. On one hand, this regulatory ambiguity has allowed for relatively unimpeded market entry and rapid expansion for nicotine pouches in many European countries. It's been a green light for innovation, you could say, but on the other, it creates significant systemic risk. Think of it like a new type of vehicle hitting the roads before specific traffic laws were written for it. For a while, it can operate in a gray zone, but eventually, regulators catch up and decide where it fits.
And that catch-up moment is coming.
It seems likely. The upcoming revision of the TPD, often called TPD3, is a major concern for the industry. A worst-case scenario could be an EU-wide ban on flavors, which, as we discussed, are an enormous driver of the category's appeal.
The 90% you mentioned.
Exactly. Or a highly restrictive classification that would severely limit how and where these products can be sold and marketed across the continent. Such a move would be profoundly detrimental.
And we're already seeing individual nations taking very different stances, even without TPD3 coming into effect, right? That highlights the fragmentation.
Absolutely. The fragmentation is starkly evident. For instance, France has already formally notified the EU of its intent to ban oral nicotine products entirely by 2025, a very aggressive prohibitionist stance.
Wow, a total ban.
Yes. In sharp contrast, countries like Sweden, with its long history of smokeless products, have actually adjusted their excise taxes to favor less harmful products over traditional cigarettes, actively encouraging the shift towards RRPs. This divergence underscores the profound unpredictability and the very different policy directions individual nations might take, creating a complex and ever-shifting legal environment for companies operating across borders.
What about across the Atlantic in the U.S.? Is the regulatory environment there any clearer or just different in its own way?
The U.S. definitely has a more centralized but no less rigorous approach, primarily through the Food and Drug Administration, or FDA. Here, all new tobacco products, and that includes nicotine pouches, must go through an incredibly stringent pre-market tobacco product application, or PMTA, process. This demands that manufacturers provide extensive scientific evidence to demonstrate that the product is appropriate for the protection of public health. This isn't just about safety, it's a comprehensive standard that meticulously balances potential benefits for adult smokers transitioning away from cigarettes against the potential risks, particularly concerning youth uptake.
That sounds like an enormous hurdle to clear. Is it even realistically possible for products to get approval given such a high bar?
It is possible, but it's undoubtedly arduous, immensely costly, and can take years. However, in a pivotal moment in 2024, the FDA did grant marketing authorization to 20 varieties of Swedish Match's ZYN nicotine pouches.
ZYN again.
Yes. And crucially, this included popular flavors like mint and wintergreen, which had been a point of major contention. This decision established a viable, albeit challenging, pathway for flavored nicotine pouches in the U.S. It signaled that the FDA is indeed open to flavored products if the scientific evidence clearly and compellingly demonstrates a net public health benefit. This was a significant precedent that clarified the path forward, but certainly not an open-door policy.
So the path is illuminated, but still fraught with obstacles. And it doesn't mean a free pass for every product.
Precisely. The PMTA process is both prohibitively costly and incredibly time-consuming, effectively acting as a barrier for smaller, less resourced companies. Many products from various manufacturers are still being sold under what's called temporary enforcement discretion while their applications are pending, creating ongoing market uncertainty. Furthermore, beyond the federal FDA level, state and local governments retain the power to impose their own, often stricter, regulations. We've seen this with flavor bans in places like California, which can significantly impact market access even if a product has federal authorization, adding another complex layer to the operational environment.
This intricate regulatory landscape sounds incredibly challenging for a company to navigate. How does HAPE manage to operate and even thrive in what seems like a constant minefield?
Well, this demanding and intricate regulatory environment, while undeniably being a primary business risk, simultaneously acts as a very significant barrier to entry for potential competitors. The substantial cost, the deep scientific expertise, and the legal acumen needed to navigate the FDA's PMTA process, or the diverse and ever-changing mosaic of European national laws, effectively deter smaller, less capitalized companies from even attempting to enter the market. This dynamic disproportionately benefits established players like HEPIP, who have already invested heavily in developing robust regulatory expertise and compliance systems as a core competency. It's a critical, specialized capability they've built.
So it's almost like a protective moat, but one that is inherently precarious, constantly subject to external political and scientific forces. Is that fair?
Exactly. That's a great way to put it. It protects them from a flood of new entrants, but the moat itself is always under threat. A single adverse regulatory event, imagine a widespread EU flavor ban, an FDA reversal on flavored products, or a significant crackdown on online sales of products with pending PMTAs, could fundamentally damage the entire category and, by extension, HAP's entire business model. This means the very factor that provides HAP with a formidable degree of protection from some competitors is also its most significant existential threat. It's a constant tightrope walk requiring perpetual vigilance and adaptation.
Okay, let's pivot to competition. Who is HAP actually up against in this rapidly growing but highly scrutinized market? Is it a field of other nimble e-commerce players, or is something else entirely at play?
Yeah, this is definitely not your typical startup-friendly ecosystem, unfortunately. The modern oral nicotine market is increasingly dominated by the world's largest, most financially powerful tobacco companies. They view this category as the absolute future, the lifeline, even of their entire nicotine franchises. So, ironically, HAPE's primary competitors are not other online retailers, but the very manufacturers of the products itself.
Right, the suppliers themselves.
Exactly. It's a classic David versus Goliath scenario.
You're talking about the titans of the industry. history then.
Yeah.
Philip Morris International, British American Tobacco, and Altria Group, the traditional tobacco giants.
Precisely. These are the Goliaths in this landscape, with resources that dwarf most other companies. First, Philip Morris International, PMI. Through its landmark acquisition of Swedish Match in late 2022, PMI became the undisputed global leader in oral nicotine. Their flagship brand, ZYN, is a category-defining product, commanding a staggering retail market share of over 70% in the crucial U.S. market.
70%.
Yes. Incredible dominance. PMI is leveraging its immense financial power, investing over $800 million in new U.S. production facilities for ZYN alone, just to keep up with surging demand. Then there's British American Tobacco, BAT. BA is another formidable global competitor with its Velo brand, formerly known as Lyft. They are aggressively pursuing an international expansion strategy for Velo, establishing strong market positions across Europe and in emerging markets, often with significant marketing muscle. And finally, Altria Group. As the dominant player in the U.S. combustible cigarette market, Altria is pushing its On! Brand of nicotine pouches. While currently a distant second to ZYN, On! Is a significant player and benefits enormously from Altria's unparalleled U.S. distribution network and deeply entrenched retail relationships across tens of thousands of stores.
These companies possess immense resources and market power. Are they also building their own online channels, effectively competing directly with HAP? That seems like a natural extension for them.
Yes, they absolutely are. Swedish Match, even before being acquired by PMI, had operated its own e-commerce site in Sweden since 2016, providing a clear blueprint for a direct-to-consumer or D2C strategy for major manufacturers. ZYN also maintains a D2C website in the U.S., though it has faced temporary pauses due to regulatory inquiries regarding compliance with local flavor bans.
Oh, interesting. So even they face hurdles.
Right. It highlights that even for these giants, the D2C channel in this highly regulated space isn't without its own set of challenges and complexities. It's a key battleground.
So given this backdrop of colossal competitors, how does HAPE, as essentially a specialized online retailer, actually compete against these vertically integrated giants who have their own brands, manufacturing, and distribution? What are their unique strengths, a competitive moat, if you will?
Good question. HAP has developed several distinct competitive advantages, deeply rooted in its specialized pure-play e-commerce business model. First, there's the aggregator advantage. Unlike a single manufacturer, which is incentivized to promote only its own brand, HAP offers the entire category. This makes its websites the go-to destination for consumers who are new to oral nicotine and want to explore different brands, flavors, and strengths, or for experienced users seeking variety that might be unavailable locally. It's about being the ultimate marketplace for choice and discovery.
A one-stop shop.
Exactly. Second, they possess a significant e-commerce first-mover advantage. Having established its online presence early, HAP has secured exceptionally high rankings in organic search results for key terms related to snus and nicotine pouches across multiple markets. This is a durable and increasingly valuable asset. As regulators worldwide begin to restrict paid digital advertising for nicotine products like banning Google AdWords, the importance of organic, non-paid traffic grows immensely.
So SEO becomes critical?
Hugely critical. It makes it significantly more difficult and exponentially more expensive for new entrants, including the large manufacturers, to replicate HAP's online visibility and highly efficient customer acquisition funnel. Third, and this is truly powerful, is data as a differentiator. HAP's unique position as a multi-brand, multi-country retailer gives it an unparalleled vantage point on the entire market. It collects granular purchasing data across virtually all major brands, all flavors, and all geographies. This aggregate data is a powerful asset that no single manufacturer can fully replicate. It allows HAP to identify emerging trends faster than anyone else, optimize its inventory and marketing strategies with surgical precision, and, as we discussed, forms the very foundation of its high-margin media and insights business.
Right, turning suppliers into paying partners.
Precisely. And finally, they've cultivated high customer loyalty. The company's well-designed e-commerce platform, which includes convenient subscription services and a vast product offering, fosters incredibly strong customer retention. In 2023, HAPE proudly reported that over 90% of its net sales were generated from returning customers. This indicates a very sticky customer base that is costly for competitors to acquire through traditional marketing channels.
That's a very clever strategy, especially the data aggregation and turning their suppliers into paying partners for market insights. It sounds like a remarkably symbiotic yet inherently antagonistic relationship with Big Tobacco. They need each other, but they're also undeniably rivals.
Absolutely. You've hit on the core tension. It's a delicate and fascinating interplay. When a company like Philip Morris International spends hundreds of millions of dollars marketing and building massive brand awareness for ZYN, they are simultaneously expanding the entire nicotine pouch category. This marketing creates millions of new consumers who then turn to search engines to learn more or to purchase the product.
And HAP is right there at the top of the search results.
Exactly. Due to HAP's strong organic SEO and market leadership, a significant portion of this manufacturer-funded traffic is channeled directly to HAP's websites, like NicoKick.com in the U.S. This creates a highly efficient customer acquisition model where competitors' massive marketing budgets effectively fuel HAP's growth. We even saw this effect starkly illustrated during the ZYN supply shortages in 2024, which drove a remarkable 121% increase in the volume of non-ZYN brands sold on HAP sites as frustrated consumers sought alternatives.
So Big Tobacco's marketing effectively casts a wider net, and HAP then fishes in that expanded pond. But what's the inherent risk here? What happens if that delicate symbiotic relationship turns overtly antagonistic? What's HAP's contingency if PMI decides to go the nuclear option and aggressively restrict supply or launch a direct-to-consumer data platform that aims to replicate HAP's insights business?
That's the critical strategic question, and it's a primary risk. The inherent danger is if the symbiotic relationship fundamentally sours. If major brands decide to aggressively prioritize their own D2C channels, they could indeed restrict supply to third-party retailers like HAPEP or engage in predatory pricing to undercut them directly.
Could HAPE survive that?
Well, HAPEP's vast selection mitigates some of this risk. If one brand pulls out, consumers can choose another. But a concerted effort by multiple major brands would certainly be a significant challenge. HAPEP's contingency relies on two key factors. First, its established customer loyalty means consumers might still actively seek alternatives on their platforms. Second, its strength as an aggregator means it also works with a multitude of smaller and independent brands that might welcome more shelf space and promotional opportunities if the giants pull back. However, the strength and health of HAPEP's relationships with his key suppliers is a critical, non-financial key performance indicator that is absolutely central to the long-term investment thesis. It's something you, as a discerning learner, need to keep a very close eye on.
Okay, that makes sense. Let's transition to the numbers. How has HAP been performing financially amidst all these market dynamics and competitive pressures? Are they just growing revenue, or is that translating into real profit?
HAPEP has an impressive and remarkably consistent track record of strong top-line growth. Their net sales have expanded at a rapid pace, growing from SEK 2.6 billion in fiscal year 2022 to SEK 3.2 billion in 2023.
That's about 22% growth.
Right, 21.8%. And this robust momentum continued into 2024, with full-year net sales reaching SEK 3.7 billion, representing a further 16.2% increase year over year. These are exceptionally solid growth figures achieved year after year in a complex environment.
That kind of consistent growth doesn't just happen. What specifically is driving this performance? Is it simply attracting more customers, or are there deeper factors at play?
It's a combination of positive trends across several key e-commerce metrics, all reinforcing each other. First, they're successfully expanding their user base, with active customers increasing from around 800,000 at the end of 2022 to over 950,000 by the end of 2023. This expansion in customer base has naturally led to a corresponding increase in transaction volume, with total orders rising from about 3.9 million in 2022 to 4.4 million in 2023. Concurrently, the company has demonstrated an ability to increase the average order value, AOV, which climbed steadily from SEK 634 in 2022 to SEK 672 in 2023.
So more customers, more orders, and bigger orders.
Precisely. But the fundamental product-level driver underpinning all of this is the rapid consumer shift towards modern nicotine pouches, or NPs. This category is the clear engine of growth. It exhibited a remarkable 41% volume growth in 2023, followed by another 40% increase in Q1 2024. This has resulted in a significant and highly favorable shift in the company's product mix. As of Q1 2024, NPs accounted for 58% of the group's total sales volume, up from 56% just the previous quarter, and management notes this share continues to increase by approximately 1 percentage point per month.
That NP growth must be vital.
Absolutely crucial. It's more than offsetting the anticipated structural decline in the company's legacy traditional snus business, maintaining the overall upward trajectory.
They segment their markets into core, growth, and emerging, which sounds like a very intentional strategy. What does that segmentation tell us about their strategic playbook and capital allocation?
This segmentation is incredibly insightful and truly reveals a clear, repeatable strategic playbook. First, the core markets, Sweden and Norway. These are HAPE's most mature and profitable operations. Benefiting from a long history of smokeless tobacco use and high online penetration, around 30% in Sweden, these markets serve as the company's primary cash flow generator. In Q1 2024, they generated SEK 672.7 million in net sales with a robust 10.8% EBITDA margin. The challenge here is managing the decline of traditional snus, but they're effectively counteracting this with vigorous NP growth, up 32% in Q1 2024.
So the cash cows are still growing where it matters.
Right. Then you have the growth markets, US, UK, Germany, Austria, Switzerland. Uh-huh. This segment is the main engine of the company's top line growth. It comprises markets with lower but rapidly increasing online penetration for oral nicotine. In Q1 2024, net sales in this segment surged an impressive 32.7% to SEK 241.8 million, accounting for nearly 80% of the entire group's year-over-year sales increase. And here's the critical part. This segment achieved EBITDA profitability for the first time in Q1 2024, posting a 2.6% EBITDA margin.
That's a big milestone.
Huge. This transition from a cash-burning investment phase to a profitable, self-sustaining operation provides powerful validation for the scalability of HAPE's international expansion model. Finally, the emerging markets, new categories and geographies, formally established in Q1 2024, this segment acts as an incubator for future growth. It currently houses their strategic expansion into the nicotine vape category in the UK, Germany, and Sweden. As expected for any new venture, it's in a heavy investment phase, with initial sales of SC 29.3 million, but an EBITDA loss of SC 10.4 million in Q1 2024.
So if I'm tracking this, the highly profitable core markets generate the cash, which then funds the emerging markets, these new speculative ventures. And once successful, those emerging ventures evolve into profitable growth markets. That's a very clear, almost life cycle driven capital allocation strategy.
Exactly. It's a disciplined, self-funding capital allocation strategy that significantly de-risks future growth initiatives. And this leads us to a truly crucial point. HAPE has demonstrated significant and sustained progress in profitability. Their gross margin has been on a steady upward trajectory, reaching 15.0% for full year 2024 and 14.4% in Q1 2024. That's a substantial 240 basis point improvement over the prior year.
And that's driven by?
It's directly attributable to the favorable shift towards higher margin nicotine pouches, tangible benefits of scale in procurement, and increasingly efficient marketing investments.
And is that improved margin translating into actual profit that flows down to the bottom line, or is it getting eaten up by other costs?
Yes, it's absolutely flowing down. Adjusted EBIT, or earnings before interest and taxes, has shown robust growth, increasing from SEK 58.5 million in 2022 to SEK 134.5 million in 2024. Consequently, the adjusted EBIT margin has expanded from 2.2% in 2022 to 3.5% in Q1 2024, clearly demonstrating their ability to translate impressive top-line growth into enhanced sustainable profitability.
Okay, so profit margins are improving. What about cash flow? Is the business generating cash now?
Yes, and what's particularly fascinating here, and a real signal of financial health, is the dramatic swing in cash flow. Operating cash flow moved from an outflow of SEK 32.4 million in 2022 to a robust inflow of SE 80.5 million in 2023. This positive momentum accelerated even further into 2024, generating a strong SEK 121.6 million in operating cash flow in Q1 alone.
Wow, that's quite a turnaround.
It really is. This marked improvement is indicative of both growing underlying profitability and more efficient working capital management, signaling a major inflection point for the company's financial resilience.
So that growth segment achieving profitability in Q1 2024 wasn't just a good number on a spreadsheet. It was a fundamental strategic shift in the company's entire financial narrative.
Precisely. For several years, the substantial profits generated by their mature core markets were effectively subsidizing the significant investments and operating losses required to build scale in the growth markets. The achievement of EBITDA profitability by the growth segment in Q1 2024 marks the pivotal moment this dynamic fundamentally shifted. The primary growth engine of the company is no longer a drag on overall profitability, but is now a positive and self-sustaining contributor. This fundamentally alters the financial narrative from a growth-at-all-costs story to one of profitable growth. This shift significantly de-risks the business model in the eyes of the market and, crucially, provides the internally generated cash flow needed to largely self-fund future expansion in the emerging segment.
Reducing the need for external funding.
Exactly. It reduces any reliance on external capital or increased leverage. It's a testament to their disciplined execution.
With all this impressive momentum and clear financial progress, what are management's big goals for the near future? What's their strategic outlook, and how ambitious are they?
Well, their vision remains remarkably consistent to inspire healthier enjoyment for millions by facilitating the global transition from combustible smoking to less harmful nicotine alternatives. To achieve this, their strategy explicitly prioritizes top-line growth to solidify their market leadership, even over immediate margin maximization in the short term. They're playing for long-term market share and strategic positioning, understanding that scale brings its own advantages.
And do they have any specific concrete financial targets they've communicated to the market to measure this ambition?
Yes, they've set clear, ambitious financial targets for the period ending in 2025. First, a bold net sales target. They aim to achieve net sales of at least SEK 5 billion by the end of fiscal year 2025. This target is predominantly expected to be met through organic growth within their existing business segments rather than large acquisitions.
SEK 5 billion. That's a significant jump from the 3.7 billion in 2024.
It is. It requires continued strong execution. Second, a profitability target. They're targeting an adjusted EBIT margin in the range of 5-7% for the combined core and growth markets business by 2025. This shows their commitment to not just growth, but profitable growth in their established and rapidly scaling segments, demonstrating increasing operational leverage.
They certainly seem to be executing well so far, especially with that robust nicotine pouch growth, more than offsetting the decline in traditional snus. What are their main organic growth opportunities to hit these ambitious targets?
Their path to these ambitious targets is paved with several distinct layers of organic growth opportunities, effectively leveraging their existing assets and market position. The most significant and immediate lever is driving online penetration. In markets like the U.S., online penetration for oral nicotine was only about 3% in 2023.
Only 3%. Wow, huge potential there.
Massive. Capturing even a fraction of the inevitable migration of sales online in these massive, still under-penetrated markets represents an enormous growth runway for HAPA, an opportunity that many traditional retailers simply can't access. Next is geographic expansion. Their scalable and replicable technology platform is a key enabler here. Having established a successful playbook for entering and scaling in new markets, as evidenced by the growth segment's journey, HAP plans to continue its methodical expansion into new, attractive European countries where regulatory environments permit.
Using that core growth emerging model.
Exactly. Then there's category adjacency expansion. The recent foray into the nicotine vape market, housed within their new emerging segment, is just the first step. This strategy allows them to leverage their existing customer base, brand equity, and established logistics infrastructure to cross-sell new products. This increases customer lifetime value and allows them to capture a larger share of the consumer's total nicotine spending. And finally, technology and data monetization. HAPE considers its proprietary technology infrastructure a core competitive advantage that facilitates agile and efficient expansion. The continued development of its media and insights business represents another powerful growth vector, transforming its valuable internal data from an operational tool into an external, high-margin revenue stream for suppliers.
This all sounds incredibly positive, a very clear roadmap for expansion and increased profitability. But every strong narrative has its challenges. What's the catch here? Is there anything that could potentially derail this otherwise robust growth story?
Right. While the growth trajectory is undeniably impressive, its sustainability hinges on a very delicate balancing act. The overall corporate growth rate is not a uniform monolithic force. It is the net result of a hypergrowth engine, the nicotine pouch category, working with incredible force against a significant headwind of a declining legacy business, which is the traditional snus category.
The NP versus snus dynamic again.
Exactly. So here's an important question for you, the learner, to consider when evaluating Haystip. Can nicotine pouch growth continue to vastly outpace snus decline? In Q1 2024, the snus decline actually accelerated beyond recent trends, which is a crucial data point that highlights the inherent vulnerability of this dynamic.
So snus is falling faster.
It accelerated in that quarter, yes. While management has initiatives in place to moderate this decline, things like targeted marketing for snus loyalists or optimizing product makes any slowdown in NP adoption or a faster than anticipated deterioration in the snus market could materially impact their ambitious SEK 5 billion revenue target. This requires constant vigilance and is a key factor to monitor as an observer of the company. It underscores that the investment thesis is contingent on successfully executing a complex dual strategy, managing a graceful decline while fueling rapid scaling.
That's a crucial point about the balance.
Yeah.
Now, looking at their finances, how are they managing their capital to fund all this growth and strategic expansion? Are they taking on a lot of debt, for instance, to fuel these ambitions?
Actually, no. They employ a very prudent and disciplined approach to their capital structure. Their balance sheet isn't aggressively levered at all. At the end of fiscal year 2023, their net debt to adjusted EBITDA stood at a conservative 1.7x. This provides a stable financial foundation and gives them ample flexibility to access capital markets if needed without being overextended or creating undue financial risk.
1.7x is pretty low for a growth company.
It is. And they also actively manage their capital structure, like a recent tender offer for outstanding warrants, which was designed to optimize their equity base and manage potential dilution for existing shareholders.
So where is the money actually going then? Are they paying out dividends to shareholders, or is the priority elsewhere?
The company's capital allocation policy is explicitly and transparently aligned with its current strategic phase, which is one of high growth and market capture. The primary and overriding priority for capital is aggressive reinvestment back into the business to seize the significant market opportunity in the global reduced risk product space. They view this as the most effective way to maximize long-term shareholder value at this stage.
So growth first, returns later.
Essentially, yes. Management has clearly communicated this strategy. They've publicly stated their intention to reinvest approximately 1 to 2 percentage points of the group's adjusted EBIT margin through 2024 and 2025. This capital is specifically directed towards funding the expansion initiative housed within the emerging segment, namely methodical entry into new European geographies and strategic expansion into adjacent RRP categories like vapes.
So for now, the answer is a clear no dividends for shareholders in favor of that reinvestment.
Correct. In line with their growth first philosophy, the board of directors proposed that no dividend be paid for the 2023 fiscal year. And they've provided clear guidance that they will consider returning excess cash to shareholders after the 2025 fiscal year.
Okay, so there's a timeline.
Exactly. It directly corresponds to the culmination of their current strategic plan and financial targets, emphasizing that building scale and solidifying market leadership comes first. For you, the learner, this frames the investment case as a long-term growth story, not an income-generating one, at least for the next few years.
This capital allocation strategy sounds like a very deliberate phased approach.
It is. The current phase through 2025 is defined by high reinvestment to build scale and solidify market leadership. The significant improvement in operating cash flow generation, which began in earnest in 2023, is critical here, allowing them to largely self-fund this growth. The second phase, post-2025, is envisioned as a period of capital return. The strategy presupposes that by this time, the growth and emerging markets will have reached a level of maturity and profitability where they are generating substantial free cash flow, similar to the core markets today. At that point, the company would have excess cash beyond its reinvestment needs, which could then be returned to shareholders through dividends or share repurchases. The credibility of this long-term promise is intrinsically linked to successfully executing the current plan.
We've touched on risks throughout this deep dive, but let's really dig into them now. What are the biggest headwinds and potential pitfalls Hate faces that could really challenge its trajectory?
Right, the risks. The most significant and potentially impactful risks facing HAP Group are unequivocally regulatory and legal in nature. This is a highly scrutinized industry, and adverse regulatory changes could have a material and immediate impact.
The regulatory minefield we talked about earlier.
Exactly. For you, the learner, this risk is a key catalyst that could fundamentally alter the entire investment thesis. In Europe, the primary regulatory risk is the forthcoming revision of the EU's TPD3. A negative outcome, such as an EU-wide ban on flavors or a highly restrictive classification, would be severely detrimental. Imagine if 90% of the market just disappears.
Yeah, devastating.
And beyond the EU, the risk of adverse national legislation is also significant, like France's proposed 2025 ban. That would force HAP out of a major market entirely. In the United States, while the ZYN authorization provided some clarity, significant risks remain. The FDA could still issue marketing denial orders, MDOs, for other popular products, HEPA cells. Plus, the political and social pressure to combat underage use is incredibly intense. Any perceived increase in youth uptake could trigger a severe regulatory backlash, marketing restrictions, flavor bans, curtailing growth, even for adults.
And the state-level rules add another layer.
Precisely. California's flavor bans are a prime example, creating a fragmented legal landscape even within the U.S.
Beyond regulation, what about the market itself and the intense competition? We've heard about the big tobacco players, but how specifically do they pose a risk?
Well, HEPA operates in that fiercely competitive market, so competition from big tobacco. Their financial might, scale, and distribution are constant threats. They could leverage their power to engage in aggressive price competition, initiating price wars that would directly erode HEPA's margins.
Squeezing them on price.
Yes. And a more strategic threat is if they aggressively build out their own DTC channels and prioritize them by restricting the supply of their most popular products, like ZYN, to third-party retailers such as HAP. This could starve HAP of essential inventory. Then there's supply chain dependency and disruption. As a pure-play retailer, HAP is entirely dependent on its suppliers. A prolonged disruption affecting a key brand could significantly impact revenue. The ZYN shortages in 2024 highlighted this vulnerability, even though it temporarily boosted sales of other brands for HAP.
It showed how reliant they are.
Absolutely. And we also had the structural decline of snus. That accelerated decline in their profitable core markets acts as a direct mathematical headwind. HAP must continue to grow NPs faster than snus declines.
Are there any internal or operational risks they need to manage as they continue to grow and expand across new markets and categories?
Yes. Several internal and operational risks demand close attention. There's execution risk. Their ambitious strategy hinges on successfully executing expansion. Entering new categories like vapes and new geographies carries inherent risk. A successful playbook in one market doesn't guarantee it works elsewhere. Adaptability is key, but not guarantees.
What works in Sweden might not work in Switzerland.
Potentially, yes. Then, cybersecurity. As a pure-play e-commerce business, they're fundamentally dependent on their tech infrastructure and customer data integrity. A significant breach could cause disruption, financial loss, and severe reputational damage. They acknowledged this risk and strengthened defenses in 2023, but it remains a constant evolving threat. Finally, reputational risk. Their reputation and social license to operate are critical. Any credible association with marketing or selling to underage individuals, or even a perception of it, could trigger severe public and regulatory backlash.
Like the vaping industry experienced.
Exactly like that. HEP emphasizes its robust age verification, but public and regulator perception is powerful and sometimes unpredictable.
Given all these factors, the massive growth potential, the fierce competition, those significant regulatory and operational risks, how do we even begin to value a company like HEP? It sounds incredibly complex.
Valuation is indeed incredibly complex for HEP because it's unique. A high-growth e-commerce retailer in a traditionally low-growth tobacco sector. There's no single direct peer, making comparable analysis tricky. We really need to look at two distinct, almost contradictory groups.
Okay, who are they?
First, the incumbent tobacco companies like PMI, BAT, and Altria. They're competitors and suppliers. They have mature, low growth profiles, high cash flow, and low valuation multiples. Altria's forward PE is around 10.8x, for example. Comparing HAPE's much higher multiples against this group highlights the significant growth premium the market gives HAPE. It's not seen as a typical tobacco stock.
And the second group?
Second, we can look at specialty e-commerce retailers. Comparing HAP to other specialty e-com companies, maybe like Lyko Group or Bocus Gruppen in Sweden, provides a better benchmark for its business model. But even these aren't perfect. They operate in entirely different markets with different growth dynamics and, crucially, different regulatory profiles. Apples and oranges, really.
So what do HAP's valuation metrics actually tell us, given these disparate and challenging comparisons? How is the market currently viewing it?
Well, HAP's multiples are definitely elevated, reflecting its strong growth profile and market positioning. Various sources report a trailing PE ratio in the 60-77x range.
60 to 77 times earnings.
Yeah, and an EBITDA ratio of around 22-33x. These are substantially higher than big tobacco, again, underscoring that growth premium. However, when viewed through the lens of a pure growth company, the valuation might appear more reasonable to some investors. The price earnings to growth, or PEG ratio, which normalizes PE for expected growth, is cited in a range of 0.76x to 1.3x.
And a PEG around 1 is often seen as fair for growth.
Generally, yes. A PEG around 1.0x often suggests a fair price, implying the high PE multiple is largely supported by its consensus forecast for over 50% forward EPS growth. So the market is very much pricing in this aggressive growth and expecting them to deliver.
If someone were building a discounted cash flow, or DCF, model for HAPE to arrive at evaluation, what would be the make or break assumptions that would dramatically influence the final number?
The DCF. It would be highly sensitive to a few critical inputs, each subject to significant uncertainty. First, revenue forecast. This is the big one. Key assumptions. NP market growth. HAPE's market share capture, online penetration gains, especially in the U.S., success in new categories. Achieving that SEK $5 billion target for 2025 would be foundational for any bull case.
Getting the top line right is crucial.
Absolutely. Second, the terminal margin assumption. What's the sustainable long-term EBIT margin? Can they exceed the 5-7% target? This depends on competition, product mix, and the scale of that high-margin media and insights business. A single percentage point difference here makes a huge valuation impact. And third, the discount rate, WACC. The weighted average cost of capital must reflect HAPE's significant regulatory and competitive risks. It would need to be considerably higher than for a stable consumer staples company.
Higher risk means a higher discount rate, lowering the present value.
Exactly. A higher discount rate leads to a lower present value for future cash flows, penalizing the valuation for risk. For context, one public DCF analysis calculated a fair value significantly below recent trading prices, suggesting its assumptions were more conservative than the market's.
So bringing it all together, what's the central debate about HAPE's current valuation? It seems to be a real tug of war.
To summarize, HAPE's current valuation perfectly encapsulates the central debate. The market is clearly pricing the stock based on its impressive growth, the vast addressable market for smoking alternatives, and its leadership in e-commerce. The high multiples reflect a narrative of a disruptive growth company successfully capitalizing on powerful trends. It's priced like it's going to fundamentally change an industry.
But this also inherently means the market might be overlooking or even underestimating some of those very real, potentially binary risks you've highlighted. That's a significant gamble.
Precisely. These elevated multiples implicitly assume a relatively benign long-term regulatory outcome. No devastating EU flavor bans, no widespread FDA reversals, and that the company can successfully defend its position against much larger competitors. The wide dispersion of analyst price targets, ranging from SE90 to SEK220, vividly illustrates the high degree of uncertainty and the very different potential outcomes envisioned. It shows just how contentious this investment case is.
Huge range in targets there.
It really is. Ultimately, the investment case for HAPE Group hinges on your personal assessment of which force will prove more powerful over the long term. The undeniable secular tailwinds of harm reduction in e-commerce, or the formidable headwinds of highly unpredictable regulation and intense competition. The current valuation reflects a confident market bet on the former.
And that wraps up our deep dive into HAPE Group AB. What a truly fascinating and complex intersection of evolving consumer trends, technological innovation in e-commerce, and a very challenging, often unpredictable regulatory landscape.
Indeed. We've seen a company strategically riding powerful shifts in consumer behavior towards less harmful nicotine products and benefiting immensely from the unstoppable migration to online retail. Their sophisticated, multi-brand, data-driven approach and their disciplined growth strategy are clearly yielding impressive financial results, marking that significant inflection point towards profitable, self-funding growth.
But you've also laid bare the very real, very complex risks they face, particularly the ever-looming regulatory changes in both Europe and the U.S., changes that could fundamentally alter their market. And, of course, the fierce existential competition for the world's biggest tobacco companies. It's truly a high-stakes game where the very factors that create their competitive moat can also, paradoxically, become their biggest threat.
Exactly. HAPE's journey represents a microcosm of how innovative, digitally native businesses can thrive and capture significant value in rapidly evolving industries. But it also profoundly underscores the constant tension between capitalizing on market opportunity and navigating intense regulatory scrutiny. The question for you, the learner, is how you personally weigh those powerful, undeniable growth catalysts against the formidable, sometimes binary risks.
So what does this all mean for you? It means understanding that even in seemingly niche markets, the most profound forces of global change are constantly at play, creating both immense opportunity and significant peril. It challenges you to look beyond the headlines and really dig into the intricate balance of forces at work, and to carefully evaluate a company's strategic responses in a truly nuanced way.
And this raises an important question for you to ponder. In a world increasingly focused on health and digital convenience, how will established industries continue to adapt to disruptive forces like HAPE? And more broadly, what role will these digitally native disruptors play in shaping the future of consumer choices, especially when navigating such intense scrutiny and the constant push and pull between innovation and regulation?
Food for thought, for sure. We hope this deep dive has provided you with a nuanced perspective you need to be truly well-informed. Thank you for joining us on the Deep Dive.